Sure, yeah, let's do that.
And one, clearing up the section here, so the wish by like in the right hand.
You can erase
everything? Can I want?
Yeah.
All right, so the formula that basically you sketched last time.
Yeah, that was a very rough sketch, actually.
Let's say this is going to be the response time with the latency for a write of a request of an offset. And this is very analogous to the read model we work in test. So it's going to be, in the general case, it's going to be omega.
All right.
Then we can wait for this to also follow. While I write this formula.
So you want to use the same construct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Alright. We were discussing about the write latency.
Okay.
And I was trying to complete the formula that Professor Raju proposed last time.
Okay.
So this is analogous to the read the model. It's basically it's everything the same except for the base case, which is let's say when you get to the leaf nodes, you need to process the write request in the end, right? So this let's say looks like very similar. It's going to be the write of RO, which we assume that R is a request that fits in a single flash unit, in the smallest possible. If you want, it could be a page, could be something that's self-contained, does not span more than one page. And this is the latency for writing this thing, so we usually have numbers for this. And there's the switch time, which last time you called clean time, I'm sorry.
Clean time, yes.
For cleaning time.
Yeah, but that would be in the case of a switch merge.
Of a switch merge.
With switch merge, you only incur a cleaning. Right. So that's why you call it switch time?
Right.
Okay.
Because basically that extra time that we will require for any write, it depends on whether there's cleaning happening or not.
But the switch time is always there, right? Independently of if full merge or switch merge, right?
That's right.
Right. When there's switch, you have this as non-trivial time. Otherwise, if you write on a block that contains three pages, then this term is going to be zero.
Right.
Altogether.
No. Why is that going to be zero?
Because you are using a free page of that same block. So we assume that there is this behavior of one block containing many pages, and you start allocating pages from the first one in the block, and you keep on doing in a log structure way.
So you're assuming that the block is a log.
It follows the log approach, right?
Yeah, I don't think that's what is happening, but go ahead. Yeah.
We may consider a different scheme, but that is as far as I think we have read so far and discussed. It's sort of agreed across vendors that it's a way to optimize random writes.
I think this is an important point for us to all understand and agree upon. And maybe there are multiple answers to this question, but one thing which is we know for sure is that you cannot update in place. Right.
That's for sure.
And if you want to write a page, you have to write it to a clean page, and which means that it has all ones, right? So you have to write it to a clean page, which means that the block containing the page must have undergone cleaning at some point. And the way you can write to a block is, well, actually, Can you write to an arbitrary page in a block
yes.
without any problems?
I mean, you can.
Well,
because the people have been talking about writing in a sequential manner in the inside the block.
I think you can write as long as all the number or all the beats where you're writing to are one.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see this operation of reprogramming.
Right. But there is no reason for writing to a arbitrary page in a block when you're doing page remapping, right? So it is easiest to actually maintain a pointer that increments sequentially.
Mm-hmm.
So you write sequentially within a clean block.
Yeah, but in that case, you need to have a page granular map, right?
Which you need a page granularity mapping.
Actually, I think it's quite big. And
you will need that anyway, correct?
No, but you can do it at the block level, right?
You could do that at the block level, but that would mean that you do a lot more copying. So if you update a page in the middle of a block, if you want to do block level remapping, you have to copy the rest of the block into a new block and replace the single page within that entire block.
But, you know, I have been thinking about this, and I think there is some relationship between the experiments we have for the read and the write, right?
Okay.
So, from my understanding and based on the experiments we have, I think, in some sense, pages are written to at least some kind of same location. It's not exactly the same page as before, but you have it in the same location within
within the block?
Within the plane, let's say.
Within the plane?
Yeah. So, let me explain myself a little bit better. So I think what is happening is that you have, because in the flash, in the flash we have our provisions, right?
I hope I have a bigger office. When can you even be awake?
So what I think is happening is something like this. So let's say that I am of the over provision with one additional plane, let's say, but I am importing only this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what I think is happening is something like you're mapping this page, in case you have to, or block, I don't know exactly how, you're mapping to this other guy, right?
Okay.
But what I mean is that it's exactly the same location, in the sense that in terms of read, it will give you the same result, right? Because what happens if you remap this to some other block that is free in the same plane, right? In that case, you won't have the same read performance, because now you have to serialize these two.
No, you don't need to serialize them, because you remap them to a different location. So instead of reading the first one, you read the alternate one, correct?
So you don't reach anymore the first page.
Yeah, that's right. What I'm saying is that if you have this, you remap it to this.
Yes.
Right?
So that was one of the things that was talked about in the design trade-offs paper, is that when you remap blocks or remap pages, you remap them within the same plane, so that you can still retain the same level of parallelism. So what I would think is that instead of having a separate plane that is over-provisioned, I would suspect that there are some blocks within each plane that are
So that means that you will have some this lock in a per plane space.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because then you can retain the same parallelism.
Makes sense.
Despite the
thing. Right. Okay. So I guess.
Was something I think was also mentioned in the design trade-offs paper.
Okay. So I guess that will give some kind of trade-off. Again, because now if you're writing to the same plane again and again and again,
then you're doing a lot more. Wear leveling is messed up because you're overwriting the same set of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
That's part of the allocation pool discussion within that paper, which they mentioned, like, it could be at different levels, one plane.
Right.
Or it could be like anywhere in the SOP.
Right.
Like it's like common sense that you would put in the same plane, or you would just provision some free blocks within to guarantee similar behavior reason why.
Yeah, exactly. If you want, the reason for constructing these planes is that so that you can do operations in parallel, and you want to retain that parallelism even after the remapping.
Okay, that makes sense.
I think it's worth now noting that everything I was discussing is on a logical level, right? So this type of mapping and whatever happens inside the SSD, we don't know, and we perhaps will never know, right? So all we can do, I think we discussed this in the past, it's like a logical modeling of things, right? Even the read model, when we discussed the striping scheme, we assumed that like a request is subdivided all perfectly, like in chunks, and distributed across all the flash units. We know that after a random write operations, those pages are going to be moved around.
Right.
So we don't have that assignment or one full stripe into the same pages anymore. But if we assume that the assignment is done in such a way that we maintain the performance or the locality, if you want, of the pages, then that striping scheme will still be valid. It's just assuming that although the pages are going to move, we're going to have similar subdivision, similar behavior in the end, right?
Right. Yeah, similar parallelism.
Right. So now this discussion of whether a page that's randomly updated here, it is located within the same block or elsewhere, I think it may not be reflected in this model, but just logically we say that it is allocated somewhere, but the performance is maintained, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Kind of behavior, right?
So I wanted to say that we should all read this paper. This paper called BFTL.
Did you send the
upload?
That's the one from Asplot. And where they focus primarily on the random writes.
Okay.
Building a better FTL for random writes, for addressing random writes, and they basically say that random write dominant IO trace from OLTP application shows 78% improvement in average response time. That is basically, threefold reduction. So if you're taking 3 milliseconds or 4 milliseconds, you go now 1 millisecond. So this is certainly something that we have to read and learn from, right? Because they seem to have done quite a bit of work trying to understand how writes actually behave and adapting for that. So did you get a chance to read this?
Not much. So
please read this paper carefully.
Name
of the... We should all do that.
Yes.
Aqua?
I'll just find it right now. Wait until later.
Yeah. Because I think that paper is going to be very relevant. Was anyone able to find the Sigmetrics paper?
No.
Yet? No? Well, I did search for, accepted... to appear in Sigmetrics. I found several other papers, but I couldn't find any on Flash. Yeah. So
let me just. I think these formulas are kind of self-explanatory, right? Like there are two details maybe that are worth discussing here. This write, there's this idea of write amplification, right? That I placed in the list of items. So that means that you request a write, let's say, n bytes. But you end up writing n plus delta bytes.
Mm-hmm.
And this delta is because this write may not be aligned to a page. It could be as worse as, let's say, scanning two pages, you request. Since from the LBA site, you can request 512, like arbitrary size. It could be like this, where you are requesting this thing. But if you're doing this type of write, you need to first read this entire thing, and put it in a free block, in the script, and then you're going to do the same for the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So you are effectively amplifying this small write, which can be 1K, into 8K, if each page is worth 4K.
So each row is a page?
Is a page. I'm assuming this is a block.
Right. In the general case, though, I mean, you will probably not get an opportunity to write sequentially to the next page. You probably write in a different block completely, which is clean block, and you're doing sequential writes in a clean block at any given time.
Right.
Right.
that's where this sort of component plays, right? So if this does not happen within 10 blocks,
then
you will have some clean time, some switch time.
Provided there are no clean blocks at all. If there are other clean blocks still in the pool, then I guess my point is that the switch time is conditional on the threshold, which means that am I running below my threshold of clean blocks? And if I am, then I have to incur cleaning costs. If not, then probably I don't incur any cleaning costs at all for the current write operation.
But can we actually put advertised costs there? Because in the end, we need a total time.
Yeah.
Right. The threshold will be difficult because that's the face of situation on the condition.
Right. So that requires modeling state, which is not easy, or tracking state.
But okay. So again, about the switch time. In the switch time, you're talking about the switch time of the next log block, right? Is that right?
The next log block.
Yeah, I mean the logging block. This block is a block that is logging the request incoming, right?
This is the write latency. So the time required from the time you send the write operation till the time you get a response back saying that the write operation
is
completed.
No, I understand that. I'm saying that we're assuming that this block is a log, right? Because you're writing in a log-like fashion.
This block is a log?
Yeah.
Well, we allocate the pages, yeah, sequentially, as if it were like a log.
Right. So, but in the switch time, you also have to do switch time for the pages, right? So, I don't see how that switch time is zero.
When you don't...
you have to update the map, right?
Updating the map?
Right.
In memory?
Yeah.
Right. So, we are sort of ignoring that cost at this point.
But... If that is true, then you should ignore as well the switch time of a block, because the switch time of a block is just an update in the map.
Right. I think what he means by switch time here is actually the cleaning time, erase time of the block.
Oh, the erase time. Okay.
Erase time. I think using the erase time may be a better... Is that what he wants, the erase time?
It covers two main cases. Right? One is the full switch. When you need to read the entire block, and
you mean full merge,
is a full merge.
Okay.
The full switch. So,
there is switch merge, and then there is full merge.
Full merge, yeah.
Okay.
The full merge. When you need to read the entire block,
yeah.
To record all those valid pages, and save it elsewhere, right?
But before you save it, you might either have to clean it, or not.
Or maybe no.
Typically the reason you're reading stuff from a different block is so that you read those out and then you erase the block, the original block where you read from, so that you can clean that block.
Yeah, which may occur immediately or later on in a garbage collection period.
You mean the erase?
The erase of the old block.
It could be more complex. Yeah, it could be more complex.
That's also conditional, I think. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So you're talking about reading out? In the switch time?
This switch time, yeah, includes all those individual times, all those conditional times.
So you mean read?
Read for sure, because you need to save all those valid pages.
No, not necessarily, because if your block has all invalid pages, then you can go ahead and erase right away.
Mm-hmm. But that's one case, right? The other case, when you don't need to read anything, is in the switch part, when the block basically contains
All invalid pages,
because you're writing all of them sequentially, and you allocate a second block from the beginning, and then you only do the switch, and the other one you don't read anymore.
Correct.
But those are like individual cases.
If you are assuming that this is happening at the plane level, right, saying that this block will be in the same plane, such a thing as a switch merge won't happen, because you will always have clean pages unless you have the only case where it can happen is when you have sequential writes.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is okay. I mean, you do have sequential writes. You have overwrites to the same block,
right.
if you write the same block over and over again, you have only switch merges. That's the experiment that you were doing.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Again, at the physical level, it may or may not happen in the plane, within the plane.
Right.
One thing that may suggest it's good to do at the plane level is this optimized operations of writing within the same plane without needing to go to the data registers and transfer to the controller and then back to the SSD cell. Those are operations that are available for the Samsung device.
Mm-hmm.
And then anyone that's using those type of cells may take advantage of that and implement switch merges at that level.
Okay. So let's try and complete the formula. I mean, are you done with the formula or not yet for the base case?
I was describing this write amplification thing. So this
yes.
is not really the time that takes to write R or N bytes, right? So this may become something more complex. And this, I think, we also discussed, like, there are many individual cases. For which when this time is non-trivial.
Yeah, so the switch, I just want to change the wording for that time.
That's okay. Yeah.
So what I could say is that to break it down a little bit more, based on what I said last time, right? So let's say merge time plus clean time. And in fact, I would then, so these are optional. This could be zero. This could be zero as well. If this is your notation. And in fact, what I would say is put this at the very end, because first you do the merge optionally, then you do the clean optionally, and then you do the write operation.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you do all of these in this sequence, they would contribute to the...
How the clean time is optional?
The clean time? Because you already have a clean page to write into.
Okay, but in most of the cases at some point in the life of the SSD, you won't have more clean page, right?
That's if you're writing continuously all the time.
No, but even if you're not writing continuously, okay, that could be because you could have cleaning happening in the background. So next time you write, you will have a clean page, a fresh page to write to.
Right, so these two are optional times followed by an actual write time, which could include some amplification.
Right. And this, of course, is for the case of non-cache write. Right? The cache has to be modeled, I think, independently.
So, again, what do you mean by amplification?
Like the case I described when you are, say, requesting to write one case, but this spans more than one single page.
Okay.
Then you need to first read those pages.
Okay.
These two, let's say, contiguous pages within a block, and write them back.
Okay.
So you end up writing more than you have requested.
Okay.
Right. So that is a problem, and I was saying like the cache is another component that should be part of the model as well, because the number of effective writes to the SSD is not necessarily the user request write.
That's right. Right. Yeah.
This might be reorganized using some other SBPLRU as one example,
mm-hmm.
and then you end up writing usually less. Well, that's one of the purpose of the cache.
More sometimes. Or if you're doing padding. So if you're doing padding, you actually
or more, but
can write
more efficiently.
You write more now for future switch merges
mm-hmm.
instead of full merges,
mm-hmm.
right?
Okay, what do you have? Why do you have the omega operator there?
That is for the recursion, right?
Yeah.
Mm. So we assume that R is the request large enough that spans more than one flash unit.
Okay.
That one leaf flash unit, and then you subdivide, and then you either aggregate the times or.
So. Okay. Same
reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah, same logic. That was pretty much.
Yeah. So if you modify this way, do you agree with this modification?
Absolutely. Because this is switch time. I was thinking. I mean, it's composed of many individual two components.
Right.
Merge is one, which is time to copy or remove the data, cell-based data in a way, and then whether you need to erase the old one, or sometimes the new one has to be erased.
Mm-hmm. So what I would suggest is before we finalize this model, let's read this paper. I think that this paper will probably give us more insight into how we can model, improve our model.
And also this is incomplete in the sense that we don't have an equation to really get the merge time and erase time there. Not necessarily the most important.
Yeah, so merge time and erase time are going to...
Which is going to be the important
part.
Well,
erase time we can assume is constant because the block erase time is 1.5 or 2 milliseconds, something like that.
And
so the merge time is going to depend on, for instance, how many valid blocks on an average that you have in blocks, in valid pages you have per block, right?
Well, I would say erase time is constant, subject to the condition, right? Condition that the erase operation is engaged, right?
It's either zero,
right,
or a fixed value.
Right, but yeah.
It's either zero or a fixed value.
Yeah, the problem is how we actually find that probability of,
that's right. Yeah. So that's the hard question.
Yeah. That's what I meant by the model.
Right. But I guess if we find that the probability you're talking about, then we can just add a fixed time, right? That is the probability of having an erasure times the.
Well, the probability is
going to be parameterized as well.
Yeah, it's going to be right. Yeah, it depends on your request
and the state
rate and
the
state.
Yeah.
And it's probably we can, you know, I would see that, you know, probably want to do the state away. Hopefully you would be able, because the state is very difficult to capture, so we just sort of, we have to capture it in the process, and this is like the rate. And this is how you actually, whether you will be able to, you know, this is actually related back to our, you know, previous discussion about queuing models and that sort of thing. It's just going to be that. It's going to be whether your erase operation is going to be able to keep up with your request so that you'll maintain the number of free blocks where you can actually be able to do this sort of thing. Or maybe you will sort of overrun that operation in the end, and then you're going to have this plummet performance.
Yeah.
Right? So somehow you need to capture, be able to capture that.
Yeah, so that's hard. I think we have to figure this out. I mean, if we're going to model it, we have to model it completely, right?
It depends on what we're going to do with the model, I guess. What we want to do with the model.
I mean, one of the things we want to do is validate the model, right? And if we want to validate the model, then...
That would be the easiest part. If we want to validate the model, all we need to say is, if this is the rate, that's conjure up a probability, say, from that rate, this is the probability. And we just try not to really put any sort of explanation why we come up with the probability. This is just a zero value, and that happened to sort of match with the cost result. But in order, if you want to do something more than that, and say, here's the sequence, here's some order of things that are coming in, which is changing all the time, you know, give me some predictions on the time.
Yeah.
That's the whole, you know, total different game.
Yeah.
And we have to sort of somehow be able to really sort of get into, you know, how we actually can come up with something.
Right.
Or some more models and actually derive something.
So I agree. So what I would suggest is that this seems like a reasonable start, but it's just the beginning, right? And so one thing which we should do, like I said many times, is to read this paper.
It has to be a very important paper.
I think it's going to be very important if we want to do this kind of work. I mean, if we want to model right, this is sort of the state of the art, I think, because they have understood the process and actually improved upon current FTA.
Do they use a simulator or
That's a good question. I think I read that they use a simulator.
Yeah, it's the flash sim, maybe one of our flash simulations.
So they're using some sort of
some model.
So which means that they actually would have to model the behavior somehow. So they talk about things like garbage collection.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, because if they use the simulator, they unless they validate their model, right, with a real SSD, it doesn't mean they know.
That's true.
How actually the SSD behaves.
That's true. Yes.
So many pieces on a spot.
What? Never.
That was kind of strange conference.
Why?
What exactly? What is the domain?
I think you get things that are between architecture and OS.
Kind of stuff
that we do, I mean, we are doing the flash profiling for object fits in very well into our
Okay. And because since doing this is very sort of broad, there's any architecture improvement,
you know,
any operating system sort of, or programming language
improvement. Yeah. But they had two SSD related papers. One is this, EFDL, which is directly SSD related, and the other one was just Gordon, which is, you know, the focus there also is flash memory, but they are talking about building low power
systems.
So we should Ariel, let's continue this discussion next time and try to improve upon it, especially how do we model the merge time and the erase time, right?
Sure.
The probability.
I will try to develop more equations to expand this expression.
Yeah, okay. So we should talk about, I need to go at 3 o'clock. What's the time right now?
35.
Okay, so let's talk about what you came up with.
Yeah, so, I was also working in some model for the write, but I guess we can discuss that later. And I also said last week that I had a new model for the read. For later. So I guess right now the premise is the most important part.
Yeah.
So I read the papers about the SSD, the Berthelfer guy paper.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to do exactly the same experiments, or at least similar experiments. So one thing I did was to change now the character device that I have to make the request to have instead asynchronous IOPS, which I thought was more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I did the same experiment I had before, that is writing to the same block again and again, but now instead of choosing exactly the same block, I change the block randomly. Right?
Mm-hmm.
All the time I am aligning I have the new request aligned to the size of the request I am using.
Mm-hmm.
So actually the results are quite weird. So first I tried with 50,000 requests, right? And it turns out that there is no difference at all between the first experiment and the first request and the last one. I mean, there is very, very little variation. And what is weird for me is that they are all below 0.02 milliseconds, right? So I would say that that's the buffer cache or the memory buffer of the device, but I'm doing random, right? So probably doesn't make sense. And so I say, well, okay, let's try a bigger amount, 1 million requests, random requests. And it gave me exactly the same result. So I'm using D2C, so the operating system's delay or anything should be a problem.
But earlier, with overwriting the same block,
Right.
No. At completely different times.
With all writing the same block.
And you're doing that.
I have different times, that's true. But that probably could be, because I didn't repeat that experiment, and before I wasn't using D2C time, so I don't know exactly if that experiment are accurate.
Oh, I see.
But what is weird for me is 0.02 milliseconds, right? That is, doesn't seem like the right number for writing 4K.
You're writing 4K?
I'm writing 4K.
What's the proof?
And you're writing continuously. Is there
I'm writing continuously. And in fact, I changed this character device to do asynchronous IO. So what I did, because I sometimes ran out of memory, and that makes sense, because if you continually create 4K requests, something bad should happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is to limit the number of outstanding requests in the queue to 20 requests. And actually, I don't know why this is happening, but it seems I saw the traces, and it seems like these 20 requests are going to the device in a burst. So all go to the device complete, and then you have the issue of the next 20 requests again, and you have the burst again, and so on. So it's not
to
like
the device. To the SSD?
So
there's command queuing in the SSD?
Then? No, I don't think so. What I'm saying is that, you issue the application issues 20 requests,
mm-hmm.
right, because the operating system limits the number of requests. So after you have 20 requests, the operating system flips the process,
mm-hmm.
okay, waiting for less than 20 requests to be in the queue. And the thing is that these 20 requests that are outstanding in the queue go to the SSD in a burst. But I'm saying in a burst is issue complete, issue complete, issue complete. It's not that they go all to the SSD at the same time.
I see.
Right. So there is not interleaving, issuing, or process
mm-hmm.
in these 20 requests going to the disk.
So you do issue complete, and then you sleep for 10 milliseconds?
I'm not sure. I didn't check that, but probably that could happen.
If that is the case, then maybe that's enough time for it to create the
three
blocks.
Yeah.
And that's why you always have good performance, right?
Yeah, so that's true.
And the write buffer is disabled as well?
No, the write buffer, I tried to disable the write buffer, but I was having this problem that we had some time back, that is this error, this bug in the device driver, or I don't know what, that triggers a loops in the kernel.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what I did, I was trying that yesterday, is to upgrade the kernel.
Okay.
And see if that bug somehow is fixed or,
mm-hmm.
And try again.
Okay, did that help?
I didn't try.
Okay.
I didn't have time.
Okay, that's a good move. So
yeah.
I think couple of things that, first of all, we need to understand why is there a significant delay between these batches of 20 requests.
Right.
Is there a sleeping in your code?
No.
So
the only sleeping, the only sleeping is enforced by the operating system saying, okay, I have enough requests, so.
Enough requests?
Yeah, because I'm setting a maximum number of requests to 20. Outstanding requests in the queue. In the IO scheduler queue.
In the IO scheduler queue. I see. But, okay, IO scheduler queue.
So probably what is happening is that in the time between the burst of requests end and the application to get the CPU again, the SSD has the time to clean.
Yeah.
Have fresh blocks for the next burst.
Which makes...
Makes sense, because 20 requests of 4K is only 8K. Right?
Yeah.
Not much.
So what I would recommend for you to do is to do your old experiment again and measure the D2C time, this new implementation, to see whether...
You mean writing to the same block?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to see whether that makes any difference. I'm expecting you get the same result as what you got with the random.
Right.
If with the 20 outstanding requests.
Right.
The second is that increase the queue size.
Yeah.
To what, 2,000 or 20,000?
Yeah, yeah. I was trying. The thing is that I increased the queue size to 20, something like that, and I also was doing some big requests. I don't remember why. And it ran out of memory, so I set it lower. I don't know. I have to increase it that time.
So I'm not quite sure I understand what's going on here. So you have a kernel process or something on behalf of the user process?
No. I have a user process.
You have a user process. Okay, let's say you have a user process. And you conjure up the number of blocks that you're going to write randomly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you issue I/O request to the kernel, or to the sort of basically writing to that device that you create, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what happened there? So each time you issue a request, you write out the request and then you do this asynchronously, like you were saying, that basically saying that there's no need to wait for that completion, you just go ahead with the next.
With the next one.
And you keep doing this as a user, and you're saying that you have a 20 limit in the number of outstanding requests.
In the device driver.
In the device driver. So if 21st comes, what happens?
Yeah, it slips. The user application.
The user application. And in doing, in serving the request, you turn around, right? You have a device, right? Where you turn around, just issue the I/O request to the device, right?
What do you mean?
I mean that, how do you handle the request? I'm just trying to see where is the queuing, where is
the... Right.
The queuing is in the I/O scheduler or the...
Yeah, the queue is in the I/O scheduler. What I'm doing is, the only thing I'm doing in this device driver is that I get requests, create a bias, right?
Create
a bias, this structure in the block layer, that is a request.
Yep.
Create a bias and send out to the block layer.
Okay.
And that's all.
Okay.
Right? So I am some kind of wrapper. Between the user application and the
block layer. You keep doing that as you keep getting requests from the application?
Exactly.
And at one point, when you try to queue the I/O request, the process blocks.
When I receive the 21st request,
and you issue it to the block layer, the process blocks.
Exactly. Well, actually, the device driver blocked the process. My device driver blocked the process.
Oh, you are
because
doing it.
Because I am the one... limiting the number of outstanding requests.
So
you do a sleep in your code then?
The device driver. Right? The user application and the device driver. I have this condition variable saying while this the number of outstanding requests are greater than right now 20, sleep.
And what do you do with all your outstanding requests?
And
who issues? Sorry.
I'm sorry, this condition variable bothers me because someone else has to signal on that condition variable and that has to be the I/O scheduler, which you
right.
have no control over.
No, actually that is done by the end completion. Right? So what I'm doing is that when I end a request, I give a signal to the condition variable saying, okay, now I update the number of outstanding requests in the scheduler.
So you have a completion handler as well that signals on the condition variable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, but the completion handler is in the bottom half, and it could be that all these, so as soon as a request completes, the next request is issued, and the bottom half runs substantially later, and that's why you get the signal only after all the requests have been dispatched.
Okay,
yeah.
So
you sort of have queue everything.
Okay.
All the requests are sent out, and then the condition variable gets fired all at once for 20 requests, and you send the next 20 requests, and then the condition variable fires for the next 20 requests.
It's just the granularity of the context switch, right?
Yeah.
Which is saying that you you basically, the user sends this asynchronously, it's just a request, right?
Okay.
You get a request, and you issue I/O operation.
Okay.
Right? So this is your process. Your process is, then you do a P on the conditional variable,
mm-hmm.
sort of,
uh-huh.
right? Or the semaphore.
Yeah.
That it's not there, you keep receiving because the user is not going to respond.
Yeah.
It's going to keep sending until the time you have the 21st request comes,
mm-hmm.
and you do a P on the semaphore and say, well, zero.
Yeah.
And the kernel process switch out. And then your completion already queuing up there, it just didn't get a chance.
Yeah.
To
so the granularity in the condition variables is what is the problem, I think. Because your signal and wait are not very high resolution. So all your signals are coming in at once because they're all being processed in some bottom half. And I'm surprised.
All signals are coming in once. Okay.
Yeah, because that seems to be the case because you have a delay between the first 20 requests and the 21st request. Right? So there is a substantial delay between the issuing of the 21st request and the completion of the first 20 requests. Correct?
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't check that gap. Okay. I mean, I don't know exactly how much time do you have between the completion of the 20th and the issuing of the.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this. So we're thinking that the one way is to increase the queue size, but
yeah.
that still does not solve because sooner or later there's going to be higher value,
mm-hmm.
which somehow is still sort of controlled by the granularity.
Mm-hmm.
Can we actually use a multi-core multiprocessor, you know, having two threads actually running, you know, really simultaneously?
Multi-core.
Or are just not familiar with the kernel enough to really suggest one way or the other? Because obviously this is, if it's just a single core, you know, you're bound by the common switch.
But even with a single core, you should be able to
execute multiple processes. So if I send an I/O request, right? I mean, if I send an I/O request to ESSD, there has to be substantial latency. I mean, at least, whatever, 100 microseconds or something like that, during which the CPU should not idle. The CPU should run something else, which should probably be, if the previous request completed, the bottom half handler of the previous request, which should trigger the signal so that as soon as the first request is completed, you add in the 21st request, so you have continuously 20 requests in the queue. That's really what you want.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So can we sort of having the completion thread having a higher priority, or somehow, you know, and you give the chance, right? So it, you know, you service the user request,
mm-hmm.
And for each request, you actually give up.
Yeah. You know, what else I can think of is that you have, you know, when you do the signal operation, it does not mean that the process that is waiting is going to execute immediately.
No.
It
yeah.
can execute at some later
in
point.
In fact, what happened is that that will only put the sleeping process into a ready queue. That's all we have.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah. So
which means that even though you have a signal, you can be dispatched at a substantially delayed time. So that's another issue that needs to be dealt with. Can we eliminate this condition variable altogether?
I try. You know, one thing that I did was to put an infinite number of outstanding requests, right? Trying to not to limit or, you know,
running out of memory.
But not to have this limitation or sleep or anything else. So the problem is that I was running out of memory. And I don't know exactly why, because the kernel is supposed, you know, in the malloc of the kernel, you have this flag where you said, okay, if I don't have enough memory, go to sleep, right? So, but this is not happening for some reason. I don't know why.
So what happens? You get a oops saying that you cannot allocate memory and the kernel crashes or something like that.
Exactly. And he says exactly that. Says not enough memory. So yeah. So I don't know. I have to check that. I have to check if the flash.
There are two different versions of the malloc in the kernel, right? Mm-hmm. One is the version of malloc where you may not actually get the memory, and the other version of malloc where you absolutely need to get the memory. If you don't have the memory, then the kernel is going to crash. I thought there were two different versions of malloc that you could use.
Yeah, that's true. No, in fact, there are more than two. So the one that I think I am using, I guess, recheck, is the one where you, at some point, will have memory.
Okay? Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're Z.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. The other one you're saying is in case you are inside an interrupt.
Correct. At that point, you cannot sleep,
So there is this black hole atomic.
Yeah.
So that means, okay, if you don't give me memory, I crash.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
So you're using the other version.
I'm using the version that is, I don't, it doesn't matter if I go to sleep, I just want, at some point, I want memory.
Okay. Now the other thing that I can think of is to rate limit the issuing of the IO request in the user space.
Yeah.
Say, well, I just add a parameter which controls, well, I issue so many requests and then I sleep for a certain period of time, I issue so many requests and I sleep. I think that may give you a bit more flexibility.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, absolutely.
So issue 1,000 requests and then go to sleep for some time. Then.
Yeah, but this is actually such the issue, the sensitive issue about the measurement, because
the thing is
is not really get handled, right? And proper time.
No, but since we are measuring the D to C time, which is the driver reporting time,
right?
We sort of eliminate all the extra time that is being spent. Even though a user process might sleep, it's still okay because we are only measuring the time at which the actual request is issued to the SSD and when you get it back.
Well, okay, so here is what I don't understand. So I think the issue part is if you can control it, you can time it precisely at the time when you issue. You call the IO, right?
Yeah.
And you just do the IO. But I'm not sure about the other side, the completion part. I mean, you know, following up with what I understand your description is, the completion happens if your completion process got wait.
I see what you mean.
Oh, wait and put in the ready queue, and you're not actually got a chance to measure.
Probably.
But the completion that you get is you in your, I think the block trace, you get alternate issue and complete events.
Yeah. DC.
So it's not that all the completion reporting times are being queued up. It's only the box. It seems like the reporting time is in the top half. Monitoring
in the top half means that it's not going to be
delayed.
Okay.
So it's right away. That's why you see issue complete in your block parts, after you parse the event. Otherwise, what you would have is a whole bunch of issues and then followed by a whole bunch of completes.
That's true.
Right. So that means that the C is happening in the top half. Being the top half, the highest priority.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I always confused. I always think that it's the bottom half is the one that.
But can we actually get the completion handling in the top half?
We have it in the top half.
No. The completion handler that you registered in the bio is going to be done in the bottom half.
But even in the completion, I am in a conflict.
You're still in the interrupt context. Even the bottom half runs in interrupt context, but at a different priority.
I see.
I'd like to toss one idea just before we wrap up, because I know we have
two
more minutes.
Okay.
For chance. I was reading this paper this morning, and then they did a analysis of the queue depth dependency in issuing the random write, and they figured that there's basically no difference in having a queue of size 1 versus queue of size 2 they vary in multiples of 2, 1, 4, 8, up to 32. And they found that the curve is basically looks the same, whether you have a queue of 32, let's say, outstanding request, or just have a queue of...
These are for reads or writes?
Right.
Right.
Okay. These are for writes. So this is basically the curve. So you see the...
One thing that you need to remember is that this is happening inside the device itself.
This is inside the SSD.
This is not the scalar queue, but rather the SSD queue. Right? So
both these devices that they're using, I think one is Intel and the other is the Fusion IO.
Fusion IO, yeah. They are anonymized, but we...
I think that's the case.
Yeah.
And when they say queue depth, I think they imply inside the device.
Yeah.
As opposed to our devices, which do not have any device...
NCQ, queue, to start with.
Any NCQ at all. These devices, they are talking about NCQ here.
My understanding is that the queue they are talking is the second case you suggested. Like the application, they have multiple threads. And those threads are going to issue like a certain amount of IOs and then stop. And all of them are going to behave similarly till you get this queue size of certain outstanding requests simultaneously. For that case, it seems that the queue depth does not matter.
That's so interesting, certainly, that the queue depth does not matter inside the device.
For writes.
For writes.
Whereas for reads, it does matter. It does matter. You see, the from QDEP 1, you increase the throughput as you increase the QDEP. So, we may try
to... Well, actually, for reads, these three seem to be the same, right?
Yeah, starting out when the Q is known, it's larger than 1.
Larger than.
So that, I mean, if... I think
why does it matter? Why it doesn't? So my question is... So whether we are actually going to hit that time where you got the throughput plummet, is it because of the queue, or is it not going to be because of the queue? Are we going to get the operational point where we're going to go beyond that queue or not? That's the question here, right?
Yeah, I have to go, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but Louis, I would suggest for you to think about... if we can do without the condition variable.
Yeah, absolutely.
If
so
you do with the rate limiting,
what I was trying to do
is to
pull the memory of requests, right, without having the current crash. So I guess that's the best option we have.
Yeah.
Or do some user level.